What's good, Flavor Fest family? We are back with another podcast episode today, Urban Leadership. And listen, Flavor Fest is not just a leadership podcast. It's an event that comes around the country now. We used to just be at one spot here at Crossover Church, but now we have been taking it on tour in the year 2023. And it's been amazing. We've been to New York City. We've been to Los Angeles, we've been to Atlanta, and we are coming to H-Town, Houston, Texas, on Saturday, July 15th. So if you're anywhere in the Texas area or anywhere near Texas, like, pull up with us, be a part of it. It's going to be an incredible, incredible weekend, y'all. So today on the podcast, I got a friend of mine that I've known for well over a decade. And if you're a church leader, like, share this with somebody right now, because this guy has some amazing resources and some amazing nuggets on how your church can be better at first impressions and better at kindness and better at loving your neighbor. This guy is like the expert at it. He even created his own conference. So we're going to be back with him in just a second. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the Flavor Fest Urban Leadership Podcast, where we talk to innovative artists, creative pastors, church planners, entrepreneurs, and people creating movements. Our goal is to inspire and equip you in ministry, music, and the marketplace. I'm your host, Tommy Urban D. Colonna.
What's good? I'm grateful you guys are tapping in today. Do me a favor and like this video right now. If you're not subscribed to the channel, jump on there and subscribe as well. Listen, our guest that's here today, he's from the Carolinas. First met this brother over a decade ago through my friend, Pastor Derwin Gray. We got to get him on the podcast. He's an OG right there. And so family, welcome my guy, Greg Atkinson. What's up, Greg? How you feeling, man?
Hey, man. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, man. I see you got your jersey on today. You got your beard looking good.
I've modeled my beard after you. It was a meeting we had half a year ago, and I looked at your beard, and I thought, I'm going to grow mine out.
Yeah, I remember. You had the nice short, tight one, and you're like, man, I think I'm going to try that. Yeah. I'm going to go for it, man. And it's looking good, man. It filled in good. Use any beard oils on there or anything, man?
Sometimes.
Yep.
So, but I'm modeling after you.
So we met over 10 years ago. I remember we were actually at the Exponential Conference, and I've heard about you before, but Derwin was like, hey, man, let's go to dinner. And I'm going to bring one of the guys from my staff. And we went down to Ybor City. We had some good Cuban food down on 7th Avenue and got to know you. And at the time, you were working at Transformation Church with Pastor Derwin Gray. And intentionally, like, Pastor Derwin launched that church to be a multi-ethnic church. He was very intentional from the beginning. He's African-American. He's married to a white lady. But he was very intentional that on his staff, he hired people of all different ethnic backgrounds, and you were one of the people that was on his team. And I know that's like a core value of yours. Like, you always have been part of a multi-ethnic church for like a couple decades now. So let's start with that. Let's talk about that passion that you have, because most of the people that tap in with the Flavor Fest Leadership Podcast are in multi-ethnic environments, and that's a core value. It's important to our tribe.
Yeah, I actually, I have a new book out, and I talk about some real stories of racism and hate and things that I experienced 30 years ago. 30 years ago, at college, I met my best friend for the last 30 years, who happens to be African American, and I was on staff at a church 30 years ago, and my best friend is an amazing worship leader, so I invited him to come sing at my church, mm-hmm. and you would have thought a war broke out. The next week, as I shared the story in the book, they had the doors blocked off and people standing at the front of the church with the doors guarding who could come in and come out. And they said, no more N-words in this church. Nope. And they were going to guard the front and make sure my friend didn't come back. And so that was, 1993, 30 years ago. And I've been battling diversity in the church ever since and speaking up on it and inviting my friend to come visit every church I've been on staff at. And so And he did come lead worship when I was at Transformation Church with Derwin. I had my friend come lead worship, but there's just a lot that I've seen, you know, especially growing up in the South, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. the Carolinas. I've lived all over the country, but when I grew up in the South and when I started ministry 30 years ago in the South, then just as it is today, there's a lot of racism and a lot of hate. And so I'm all about breaking down walls and mm-hmm. trying to create a bridge and let people have proximity to somebody who's an awesome person. Mm-hmm. And they just have never spent quality time with somebody of another ethnicity. And so I'm a networker connector. I like to introduce people. And that's kind of what my best friend and I have done for the last 30 years, is try to build bridges instead of, you know, tearing down walls. But it's been an adventure.
Yeah, man, I bet. So how did you first connect with Pastor Derwin? What led for you to be on staff at Transformation? That was kind of in the early years, too.
It was. They were a new church. We got connected on Instagram. We both followed each other and started direct messaging. And I was in the middle of the country. I was in Joplin, Missouri. And I wrote about that experience in the book. Had just lost my job there. And Derwin messaged me on Instagram and said that they were looking for a campus pastor at their South Carolina campus. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I grew up in South Carolina. I'm born and raised from South Carolina. Grew up in the upstate Greenville, South Carolina, went to college in the low country, Charleston, South Carolina. I said, you know, Carolinas are my home. And so next thing I know, I came on staff, but, it was just kind of a God thing how we started talking on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So IG, never know, could lead to a job connection for you. Be open.
That's right.
You
do that same thing on Threads if they had direct messaging, but I don't know if you joined Threads, but I am.
No, I have not yet. I just heard about it yesterday, and you know, the internet's all a buzz about that. So what do you think about it, man? Does it look like Twitter? I haven't been on it yet.
It is a little bit like Twitter and a little bit like Instagram, obviously created by the people that created Instagram, but
yeah.
Nils Smith, I know you know Nils. Nils, yep. And I have been on there and been active and been finding people. And it is, it's controlled a little bit more than Twitter. So, you know, Twitter's like the Wild West and anything can happen and people could say anything with no no consequence. Whereas on Threads, what I've noticed, if somebody says something whack, there's a warning that comes up that says this person is sharing false information. Are you sure you want to follow them? And so,
yeah.
So it's a little bit more.
Well, that's kind of what Twitter used to do.
What it used to do.
Until Elon Musk got a hold of it and kind of like took off all the boundaries and let people just kind of say mostly whatever. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with it. And I read this morning that Elon just sued Facebook and Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, saying that they stole some, you know, proprietary like ideas about Twitter. And he actually hired several people that used to work at Twitter that knew some of the like key ways that, you know, it's built.
Yeah, I read that too. What's interesting about that is Elon fired all those people, came in, cleared house, did not care who he fired, and then he's upset that they get a new job.
Yeah. So
if you're gonna fire the people who you claim to be are so great, don't be surprised when they get another job at a tech company.
If Elon and Zuckerberg got into the ring, what do you think would happen?
I think Zuck would win. You know, he's that studying jujitsu and all that and doing the tournaments. I think he would win, but I do want to see it. I would be interested.
I wonder if it's actually going to happen, you know,
Coliseum in Rome.
People talk a lot of talk. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see. Yeah. So I know you've been involved big in the social media space and you paid attention to that over the years and paid attention to tech and how that connects with, you know, the church. And after you were at Derwin's church, you know, you kind of transitioned, like first impressions became like a real big passion of yours. You transitioned into really kind of helping churches with that. wrote a couple books on it, the Secret Shopper book, and that helped a lot of churches. And I know you wrote a lot of different, you know, articles, spoke at a lot of conferences about it. And then you ended up launching your own conference that was specifically to help churches, you know, with first impressions, because a lot of churches don't do well at it. You know, we look at like Disney or whatever as like, you know, Disney does so great with customer service and the customer experience. And a lot of churches just, you know, they're paying attention more now, I think. But for a long time, they really didn't pay attention. Obviously, the church you were at in the 90s where they're blocking the door and they're, you know, cursing at people that like, what are you thinking? Like, but so, man, talk a little bit about that journey. What grew that passion inside you to help churches do better in that area?
Yeah, so, you know, I met Derwin in 2013, so it's been a decade when we got connected, but I started my expertise in first impressions in 2009. So I started 18 years ago in 2005 consulting with churches in just general areas, just how to let your church thrive and grow and be healthy. That was in 2005. Mm-hmm. But in 2009, a mentor of mine said, Greg, you should be a secret shopper. And then I just started really focusing on the guest experience and first impressions. So that was 2009. And then in 2017, I started the First Impressions Conference. And I only did it because somebody had asked me, an executive pastor said, we just hired somebody to be over First Impressions. What conference should we send them to? And I was speechless. And I was like, kind of like your niche with your conference. I was like, there isn't anything. There's nothing that exists for people that care about first impressions. I had spoken at a lot of conferences as a tract or a breakout or a keynote, but there was nothing dedicated to first impressions. Yeah. And so we started that in 2017. We've had 9 events, 9 conferences, and then this fall will be the 10th one. But what we found was we saw a niche, and we saw that we hit a nerve that people really cared about guest retention. You know, if we're all wanting guests to visit our church, but the key is that they actually come back, you know, that a first time guest turns into a second time guest. And so that's what we, for the last 6 or 7 years, have focused on trying to help churches with. I guess it's been 6 years, focused on helping that guest return for a second and third visit.
Man, and talk a little bit about the numbers, because it is astonishing the amount of church leaders that have tapped into the conference. I know you've, you know, most recently have done it mostly virtually. You did a few in person. But, man, talk about those numbers. I mean, it just shows the need of people, like, wanting this information.
Yeah, so we went totally virtual and online conferences starting in 2020 with COVID. And we're getting back to hopefully going back in person in the fall. But the last several conferences since 2020 were online only, and we reached audiences of 100,000 plus people from all over the world. The majority were the U.S. Number 2 was Canada, but we had 60 countries represented. But 95% were from the United States, and we were reaching large numbers because there was no travel, you know, no flight, no hotel, no rental car. Yeah. They could log on and watch the conference. And even when we do a live event, like we're working on the behind the scenes of an in-person event this fall, even when we do that, if you're not able to travel, you could still watch the live stream and see what's happening in the room. So it's hybrid. So they can tap in, watch, see it, sleep in their own bed. They don't have to get on an airplane. So we try to offer both options, because we have a lot of people who either one, don't have the budget to travel, or two, they're too far away. You know, they're in Australia or Africa or New Zealand or the UK. And so as much as they would want to be at our conference in the Southeast, they just can't make it. So they watch online.
And you guys have had some incredible speakers, some of like the top names in the church world. Like give a couple of those names. Do a couple of name drops.
Yeah, so we had, you know, Tommy Urban D, we had Christopher Harris, you know, we've been really pulling people out of Crossover Church. So, you guys have both spoke at our conference.
Now, talk about the big dogs, man. You've had some really well-known, people.
Somebody was asking me the other day what it's like working with certain speakers, and I said, you wouldn't believe how kind and gracious they are. Like, some of our biggest names like Rick Warren or Craig Rochelle or Christine Kane were very pleasant to work with and mm-hmm. had no ego, no attitude, no problem. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you get to see the behind the scenes of how organized some people are. So we did 1 year, we had a November conference, but Craig Rochelle sent me his video in March. He was that ahead of schedule. He's wow. just super organized.
That guy is a systems maniac, bro. He is.
He had a team around him that, that manages his calendar and says, you need this video turned in by this date. And they just knocked it out early. I kind of gave the guideline of here's what I'm looking for. Here's what I would love for you to speak on. And he just cranked it out. And so what's neat is to see the behind the scenes of also some speakers that have been to your conference. Like we had Eric Mason and others, mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys that, really got into the topic of hospitality and creating welcoming environments and making people feel warm and welcome. And so it's been great to see across the denominational lines, no matter what the size of the church is, no matter what the ethnicity of the speaker is or the gender, male, female, they all are passionate about creating welcoming environments and being hospitable. And our last conference we just had in May, your executive pastor Christopher spoke and did a great talk. And so we were mm-hmm. talking about this theme of kindness with the release of my new book on kindness. And so Christopher did a great talk, but it's been great to see people dive into these topics that I think are so needed for the church, because hospitality is all throughout the Bible, mm-hmm. Old Testament, the New Testament. We're called to welcome the stranger, and as you said, love our neighbor.
Yeah.
And so to see pastors take this seriously has been probably the most rewarding part of my job.
That's great. What would you say, Greg, to a leader that's watching this right now that is trying to do better? Maybe they don't really even have a first impressions department yet. A lot of smaller churches are trying to maybe figure that out. You know, the old school terminology was ushers, Now we've kind of called it first impressions. And what would you say, like, where could they start to do better at?
Yeah, so two very affordable resources were my previous two books before the kindness book. So I wrote Secrets of a Secret Shopper, which has a green cover. It's easy to notice. And I wrote the Hospitality Ministry Handbook, which has a purple cover. It's easy to notice. But both of those have chapters on every position, from parking to ushers to greeters mm-hmm. to security, check-in. There's job descriptions. There's all kinds of stuff in there. And so if you have never really put, like you said, a system in place, a mm-hmm. system of we're going to greet people from the parking lot to the pew, from the street to the seat, you know, if whatever we're going to do as a church, here's how to go about laying out those teams. And so in those books, the cool thing about the Secret Shopper book that I wrote is I realized that most churches in America are 200 people or less.
Yeah.
And most of those are 100 or less. And mm-hmm. so I realized that as much as they would like to bring in an outside consultant like myself, they just didn't have the budget to do it.
Yeah.
So I told my publisher, let me write everything I look for and what I do on a Secret Shopper visit so mm-hmm. that they can buy the book, read it, and make the changes themselves. So you can buy the book for $5 to $10, depending on if it's Kindle or paperback, instead of paying thousands of dollars to fly me in and consult at your church live. Just read the Secret Shopper book and perform your own Secret Shopper at your own church, or give the book to somebody in your church and say, hey, would you read this over and then come look at our church with new eyes. A lot of pastors have used the book to train up their teams and to give them feedback on things to look for. You know, they would say, Greg said we should be sure to clean our restrooms and to do this, 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 and this. And so they,
it smells good.
Right. Yeah. But the goal is to help small churches to be able to excel in that area without busting their budget.
That's good. Yeah. First impressions now, I mean, it even starts digitally on your social media and your website, and people are going to check you out a lot of times first there. So you want to also make sure that digitally things look good. But then when they actually come in person, like you said, Greg, I mean, it starts like in the parking lot. And then as they walk through the front doors and just as they experience it with all their senses. And, you know, when we go to church every week at the same place, we kind of get immune to, we don't see that stain on the wall. The smell in the bathroom doesn't bother us. We're going to talk to all of our friends, and we might not even notice the new people that are walking in and how they're sensing and smelling and feeling everything that's around them. And so, you know, the stat I've heard many times that I've talked about even to other church leaders and people I coach is like, man, people are going to make a decision like in the first 5 to 7 minutes if they're even coming back to your church. That might even be before the first worship song is played, before the preaching happens. Like, they're pretty much already going to make up their mind, like, okay, do I vibe with this place or not? So that's why, you know, first impressions and the team that helps with that is super important. So, but hey, Greg, I do want to ask you, we're going to talk about your book, Kindness, in a minute, but I do want to ask you about the Secret Shopper book, and really not just about the book, about they used to hire you, or maybe still you do it sometimes as a consultant, to go in and be a secret shopper. So, man, like, yeah. Like, tell us, like, a crazy experience or two. I know you got some, man, like, when you went to some places and things you might have saw and experienced behind the scenes.
Yeah, I still do it. Just this week alone, I gave a quote for a secret shopper to a large church in Arizona, a large church in Florida, and a church in Virginia Beach. And I still go out and do it. I used to do way more before COVID. I was traveling every other weekend, twice a month, to go to churches all over America. Things kind of slowed down with COVID, but I still do them. But when I go in, I'm looking for things that surprise me, things that throw me for a loop, things that confuse me. Because, you know, as a professional secret shopper, I'm very used to being new somewhere and being lost and being ultimately I'm used to being in different churches. So if I come there and I'm confused and I don't know what something is, that's a big deal, because I'm about as familiar as you could get with a church,
You've seen all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of denominations, styles, everything.
I've seen it all. So if I'm scratching my head thinking, what is this? Then there's something wrong. But I've had funny stories. You know, I test security. I try to go places I'm not supposed to go. I've been almost arrested. I've been background checked. I've been almost tased. I have gone where I'm not supposed to go, and very successful at getting into areas that I should not be in. Yeah. And so that's why the key is that only the pastor or the executive pastor would know that I'm coming. So. And a lot of churches, because I primarily work with large churches, it would be like your executive pastor, Christopher, knows I'm coming, but he hasn't told a soul. And so I show up and then they're shocked that, you know, there's a secret shopper there. But they usually, the staff
not going to tell the security team.
Right. Don't tell anybody. So usually the staff doesn't find out until it's already happened. I will stay over and do a lunch with the staff afterwards. And they'll walk into a conference room and they'll say, this is Greg. He secret shopped this today. And they're like, oh, man. And then, you know, I can unpack some of the things I noticed. And then I go back and work on a very detailed report. The last report I wrote was like 100 pages. Like, it's a very detailed report that outlines everything that I noticed and that I that caught my attention. But yeah, I still do it. Still do it.
Man, that's interesting. That must be fun at times. You're like trying to sneak into places, trying to ask people like weird questions to see what their response is going to be, how they're going to handle it and deal with it. That's good.
And that's all good. Over the country. So I have to try to quickly become familiar with cities and neighborhoods, because they'll ask you, where do you live? Where are you from? And you know, and I'm in Arizona talking about, I just live right down the road and so and so, you know, and that, you know, they can get very suspicious very quickly. But but there was a time where the pastor, the lead pastor, who was the only person that knew I was coming, had to talk to the police officer because he was going to arrest me and take me downtown. The pastor was the only person that knew I was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, the police officer didn't know what a secret shopper was. I was trying to explain it to him and he thought I was crazy. Mm-hmm. But I said, no, seriously, here's the pastor's number. Call him, ask him. He knows I'm here. He knows I'm supposed to be here. But it's been an adventure. And, you know, since 2009 of secret shopping churches all over America. So it's been quite the adventure.
Man, that sounds like fun, though. It does sound fun. But I know that helps a lot of churches to see what some of their weaknesses are. So even churches that are out there, maybe you can't hire Greg, but find somebody. Get somebody that can come in, and if you get his book and you can kind of look at some of the key things that they can look at.
And, you know, to your point earlier, we were talking about our passion for diversity and multi-ethnic ministry. That's something I've always looked for. You know, yeah. I would give churches blunt feedback. I'm very direct in my consulting. Mm-hmm. And so I can give direct feedback of it was a very white church or, you know, it was this or this or this. And so I had a friend that just moved to my city in North Charlotte, and he and I were visiting the same church. And then we had dinner together last week and we got together and I said, what did you think of blank church? Mm-hmm. And he said, very white. It was almost all white. And I said, yeah, I picked up on the same thing. And so, you know, one of the tips, as you mentioned, most people check you out online before they ever check you out in person. Yeah. And so your true first impression is online. And with knowing that, they want to see what the look of your social media is, your photography, the pictures you show of people. But the number one most visited page on any church website is the staff page. They want to see if you're a bunch of old white men. Or do you have diversity on your staff? And so people look at the staff page first and foremost to see, is there anybody there that looks like me? And so if they see it's all white men, there's no females, there's no diversity in ethnicity, if they don't see anybody else. And so a lot of times I will coach churches on how to improve their staff page.
Yeah.
Even if it means adding some high capacity volunteers that are not paid staff, but they're over a ministry to give different people, different leaders, different looks, different genders, different ethnicities on the staff page. Even if they're not collecting a paycheck, I'm like, hey, you've got so-and-so that's over guest services. Why don't we add her to the staff page so you have more females and it's not all men. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is the number one page people check out.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, less than 20%, or maybe we're almost up to 20% now with the latest stats of churches are multi-ethnic in America. But the status of that to be considered multi-ethnic is that you have at least 20% diversity. And to me, that's not that much diversity. If you have 80% of one people group and then 20% of another, that's not really quite there. So churches that are like truly multi-ethnic are still in the single digits, in my opinion. And then, you know, a church like mine is crossover is multi-ethnic, multi-generational, and multi-class too. The multi-class piece is a very, very small amount of people. People that
you're probably also multilingual.
Yeah. Yeah. We do have that as well. And, you know, we sing songs in Spanish every now and then. We'll drop that at least once or twice a month. We have a couple songs that we sing in English and Spanish. We have about, you know, probably about a third of our crowd is Hispanic. And, but, you know, everyone joins in and it's cool. We even have a song that we do some in Creole. We do have, you know, a number of Haitians at our church too. That's a, kind of the second biggest people group probably in our city as another language of at least that people that attend our church. So, but yeah. So churches out there, we can do better if we love all of our city, welcome everybody in, and the first impression is they're going to see some people that look like them, not just in the crowd, but on the platform, on the staff page, around the leadership table, like from the top to the bottom, there's diversity, and to be intentional with that. So
and what I've said for years is, one, does your church look like your community?
Yeah.
And two, does your church look like your school system? Yep. So if you've got kids that are going to a local elementary, middle school, or high school, and that high school is very diverse, but your church is monoethnic, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, if you tell me that we live in the whitest place in America and 99% of our community is all white, then it's going to be hard to have a diverse church. Yeah. You know, that's just reality. But if the school system is diverse, but your church isn't, then you've got some work to do. And you're going to have to, like you said, be very intentional on how you lead and how you staff.
Your church should look like Walmart. What does your local Walmart look like?
Right.
Yeah. So, Greg, let's talk about your brand new book, Kindness, that's been a bestseller. Man, it's been doing great. It's been touching a lot of people. You know, I've gotten to read a big portion of it. And the thing that shocked me, like, we've been friends for like a decade, but, you know, I didn't even know about some of your childhood growing up and some of the challenging things that you went through that was totally opposite of kindness, that really kind of shaped this heart for, you know, you to make sure that everybody's treated correctly. So talk about even you, your story growing up a little bit and kind of what birthed the, you know, the whole concept of the book.
Yeah, so in the book, just like my previous two books on hospitality, I have a chapter where I dive into hospitality in the kindness book, but the book opens with the chapter on forgiveness, where I share my personal story of abuse and trauma and bullying and neglect. And so, you know, when you grow up being abused, when you grow up being bullied, there's different ways that you can form and develop. And for me, it developed a huge heart for hospitality and this mantra of kindness, kill them with kindness and be kind. And so, you know, there's a lot of movements on social media now. There's hashtag be kind, hashtag kindness. There's a lot of people that are getting behind this anti-bullying movement in the communities. And so my book opens with my story of things that I have been through and things that I have wrestled with since childhood and that drove this passion in me for hospitality and for kindness. And so I thought, what's different than the Secret Shopper book is the Secret Shopper book was very practical, very how-to. Here are some steps to take to welcome guests at your church. This kindness book is, let me tell you the story of Greg Atkinson. Here's how I was shaped. Here's how I grew up. And here's what made me the man I am today. And so I wanted it to be very real, very personal, very honest and transparent. And the feedback that I've been getting is amazing. I have heard from grown men who cried reading my story. I've heard from grown women who cried reading my story. I heard from a counselor and therapist who said he was going to recommend it at his practice to all his clients. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that subject of forgiveness is the core of Christianity, but there are so many people walking around struggling with unforgiveness. They've been hurt. They've been wronged as I have, but they have not chosen to forgive those that hurt them. And so, underneath the surface, they're very angry and they're very bitter and very upset. And so when you interact with them, even though they may have a good heart, they may not come across as kind people because that hurt rises up and that bitterness rises up. And so I wanted to go deep really quickly and start off with the chapter on forgiveness. And I always say it's not easy. There's no magic bullet. You know, this is something I've wrestled with my whole life and, you know, have been through some tough situations, but by the grace of God, I was able to forgive and to move forward in a healthy manner.
Yeah, the first chapter, man, was powerful. I almost got a little emotional too. Also knowing you as a friend and being like, oh man, I didn't know like you had went through all of that. You know, we never had a deep conversation about our childhood. You know, we're always usually talking about ministry and business type stuff, entrepreneurship. But, man, I think that, you know, you being vulnerable like that as a man, it really just, you know, gives permission for other men to be like, man, this is what I went through. This is how I felt. But then the awesome thing is to see what your response was from it. Instead of you getting bitter, instead of you getting angry and just building up all these walls and, you know, doing the same thing and doing that to other people and putting them through what you went through. That's what so many people that do get hurt. The old saying, hurt people hurt people. Instead, you flipped it, and the Lord helped you say, no, I'm going to make sure that people are never treated like the way I was. And you've started this campaign and movement of kindness. And so what's been some of the response, man, on the book? I know it's been touching so many different people. I was just even looking on Amazon and was reading all the comments and reviews of people that it really touched.
Yeah, I think it's been very rewarding to see that it resonates with people and to see the response. to get the messages, the emails, the comments from people of this really moved me, this really touched me, this opened my eyes. As you know, we're encouraging churches to buy it by the case, to put it in their bookstore. We're working behind the scenes on a small group curriculum that churches can dive deeper into this fruit of the Spirit, kindness, and go into a deep dive in kindness. My YouVersion devotional just got uploaded last week. I looked yesterday on the back end, and there were already almost 5,000 people that had started the Secret Power of Kindness devotional on the Bible app.
Go tap into that. It's free, and that'll give you a little taste of it.
It's a free resource, but I just literally heard from somebody on Facebook yesterday who said it's a 10-day devotional because there's 10 keys in the book. And a guy said, hey, I'm on day 5 of your devotional. I'm loving it. I'm about to order your book. And so if you want to test the waters and just see if you even like the content, check it out on YouVersion for free. But I wrote the devotional for that. And then now I'm working with a buddy on the small group discussion guide and leader's guide and questions for small group study. But it's been exciting to see people that, you know, I was talking with a friend, and I'm not going to name him because you know him and I know him, but I was on his podcast and he said, I had to look it up. I didn't realize kindness was a fruit of the Spirit. And I said, yeah, that's why it's the secret power of kindness. It's a little talked about fruit of the Spirit that people don't realize that, hey, being kind is actually biblical. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it's been taken over by all kinds of people on social media. And there are so many kindness movements that have nothing to do with faith or with God or Christianity, but the roots of kindness are biblical. It goes all the way back to the New Testament and what we see. Well, there's a lot of descriptions of God in the Old Testament as kind. You know, Jonah said, I knew you were kind and gracious when God decided not to wipe them out. When the people repented and Jonah got upset at God, he said, I knew you were kind and merciful and gracious. That was the God all along. Same God in the Old Testament is the same God in the New Testament. And I end the book with a verse that means a lot to me, where it says it's God's kindness that leads us to repentance. Yeah. And so God modeled kindness to us. God modeled forgiveness to us. And so we can forgive ourselves. We can forgive others because God in Christ forgave us. And then the same way we can be kind to others because God has modeled kindness to us and shown us kindness. And so something that's been powerful to me over my 4 decades of life and times where I have fallen or strayed or gotten distant from God is that it's his kindness that leads me to repentance. And it's always his kindness that leads me back home. And so he's the God who pursues and his kindness is what chases after me. And so it's been really cool to hear the feedback.
That's good. Yeah, kindness, man, it can change somebody's life. And you might not even realize it. And it doesn't cost us anything. Like if we're just kind to somebody, we just open the door for them, we smile, we give them a compliment, it can literally save somebody's life. There's so many people out there struggling with stuff right now. Anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, all that is at an all-time high. And God could use you in a moment. You might just feel like, oh, I'm not really, it's not that big of a deal. It could be a huge deal to somebody else when we're kind to them. And, you know, God can use it as a ministry moment for real. So kindness is available. Like, go pick it up. It's going to be at the Crossover store as well in our lobby. We got copies of it coming. So it's on Amazon. It's on all the outlets. Like, go pick it up, support, check it out. Check out his other books as well. And so Greg is going to be with us at Flavor Fest in Tampa this fall, and he's going to be doing a workshop on first impressions, on kindness, on secret shoppers. All the stuff that we talked about today is going to do a deeper dive in that. So you definitely want to join us at Flavor Fest in November, right here in Tampa, Florida, November 2nd through the 4th. So flavorfest.com, flavorfest.org, my bad. We're a .org, not .com. Flavorfest.org, tap in, plug in. We got people registering. We had a whole bunch of people registering the past week for Tampa, and we're running a 4th of July special. You missed it. We're going to run some more specials, though, but definitely mark your calendars. Plan on being part of it. We're expecting this year is going to be our best Flavor Fest ever, being that we did the tour all year and so many people from other cities are going to be tapping in. So Greg, how can people also find you online? Give us your IG and your YouTube and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I first say the simplest way to find my book, which is called The Secret Power of Kindness, is to go to the title, secretpowerofkindness.com. That'll land you right on the book. And then I'm greg@gregatkinson.com is my email. gregatkinson.com is my website. @GregAtkinson on Twitter, @GregAtkinson on Instagram. I just started @GregAtkinson on Threads. And the Greg Atkinson on Facebook. You can easily find me on Facebook. But I honestly am spending more and more of my time on Instagram. And so that's just @GregAtkinson. But very searchable. You can just find me by my name.
Yep, IG, that's where I'm at most of the time too. So maybe I'll try Threads out. We'll see. But hey, Greg, could you go ahead and close us out? I like to always ask my guests to just pray for everybody that's tapping in, that's tuning in. There's church leaders, there's first impressions people, there's church planners, there's artists, entrepreneurs, and man, just pray over them today.
Yeah, Father, I thank you for your kindness towards us. I pray that you would reveal that to anybody listening, anybody watching, anybody hearing this, that you would overwhelm them with your kindness, your love, your mercy, your goodness, your grace, and that would change their life in such a dramatic way and in such a transformative way that they would be kind in their daily life and reactions with others, and that together through our kindness, we could change the world. Thank you for this time together. I pray that you bless Pastor Tommy, their preparation for the conference in November, and all that he's got going on in the near future and leading his church and all that he's got his hands in. I pray that you'd bless him and guide him. Thank you for this time, this conversation today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen, amen. Come on, make some noise for my guy, Greg Atkinson. Yeah, man. Thanks for being on the podcast with us today. Appreciate you, man. Go check out the book, The Power of Kindness, and we will see you guys at Flavor Fest in Houston or Flavor Fest in Tampa with both me and Greg. Guys, have an amazing day. We'll see you on the next podcast. Peace. We out.
Thanks for tuning into the Flavor Fest Urban Leadership Podcast. Stay connected with us on social media @UrbanD813 and @FlavorFest. We'll talk to you guys next week. Peace and God bless.